federal, por la educación, por el trabajo, por la producción nacional, por el salario digno. Creo que las marchas y las protestas van a crecer si el gobierno no atina a darse cuenta de que tiene que producir cambio.
Consultado por Farco sobre la campaña del gobierno y sus medios aliados para hacerle creer a la población que la huelga no tiene sentido, a pesar de que se trata de un derecho garantizado por la Constitución, Yasky opinó que la propia gente que votó al presidente Macri se tiene que dar cuenta que por este camino el país va mal.
La gente común, por más que le haya votado a Macri, se tiene que dar cuenta de que las cosas están empeorando, de que por este camino no vamos a encontrar ninguna otra salida que no sea empobrecer todavía más a la Argentina, a su población, que hay que apostar a que el gobierno escuche, porque este paro es para eso, este paro no es un paro para destituir al gobierno y toda esa parafernalia de invenciones que quieren emparentar la acción del sindicalismo con la desestabilización. No es verdad. El paro es para que haya un cambio de las políticas. El paro es para que el gobierno proteja al mercado interno, para que le dé a los trabajadores la posibilidad de tener una paritaria libre, no una paritaria donde viene y te dicen 20-19% cuando vos sabés que la luz, que la electricidad, que todo lo que tenés que pagar aumenta el doble y el triple. Entonces, creo que eso es lo que tiene que pensar inclusive el que lo votó a Macri. No es bueno que un gobierno se ensordezca, no es bueno que un gobierno se enceguezca, no es bueno que un gobierno se crea el dueño de la verdad absoluta. Que escuchen, que cambien a tiempo, eso es lo que estamos pidiendo.
Y el paro general de mañana se va a sentir fuerte en todo el país. No habrá transporte urbano, interurbano, ni de larga distancia. No habrá actividad en los aeropuertos. No habrá atención en oficinas públicas, municipales, provinciales ni nacionales. No habrá clases en escuelas públicas y privadas, ni en las universidades. No habrá recolección de residuos. No habrá atención en bancos. Los cajeros automáticos van a ser recargados hoy, pero no mañana. Los trabajadores de estaciones de servicio también adhieren a este paro. No habrá venta de diarios y revistas, y en los hospitales solo habrá guardias mínimas.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras wordpress.com.
En Venezuela se mueven las piezas en el ajedrez político al tiempo que los aliados de Washington intentan despedir al primer mandatario y al Tribunal Supremo de Justicia. Mónica Avistali tiene más detalles.
Un parlamento en desacato por no acatar las sentencias del Tribunal Supremo de Justicia y cuyos actos han sido declarados por esta razón nulos y sin validez jurídica, se reunió este miércoles para una sesión especial. Aprobó un acuerdo declarando la ruptura del orden constitucional y un supuesto golpe continuado contra el poder legislativo por parte del gobierno de Nicolás Maduro y de los demás poderes del Estado. Asimismo, acordaron la activación del proceso de destitución de los magistrados del Tribunal Supremo de Justicia, que según los diputados estarían involucrados en dicho golpe.
Estas vergantes y vergantes, con el respaldo del alto mando militar y de los organismos colectivos violentos que hacen presión desde adentro y desde afuera para asesinar esta Asamblea Nacional, han perpetrado el autogolpe de Estado continuado del que tenemos que zafarnos, protestando cívicamente, ejerciendo nuestras funciones constitucionales y no cediendo ante un gobierno que es al mismo tiempo fallido y forajido.
Los diputados del Bloque de la Patria acudieron al recinto legislativo para fijar su posición. El de la derecha es un intento de golpe de Estado parlamentario, ya que según la Constitución, el legislativo no tiene facultad para destituir por sí solo a los magistrados del máximo tribunal.
Vuelven a intentar un golpe parlamentario, como lo dieron en Paraguay, como lo dieron en Honduras, como lo dieron en Brasil, como lo han intentado dar en Venezuela. No olvidemos el intento de destituir al presidente por un juicio político o la declaratoria de abandono de cargo este año. Ambas acciones claramente ilegales, claramente inconstitucionales.
artículo 333.
El pueblo chavista también tomó la palabra. Asambleas populares en las afueras del Parlamento con dirigentes y juristas para debatir el acontecer político nacional.
Lo que están haciendo ahorita es intentar darle un puñal en el corazón a la única constitución venezolana promovida, desarrollada y aprobada por el pueblo de Venezuela.
Allí, constitucionalistas explicaron que no hay ningún golpe contra el Parlamento. Simplemente, su situación de desacato voluntario obliga a que otro órgano supla sus funciones, garantizando así el funcionamiento del aparato estatal.
Esta sala constitucional tiene el deber de cuidar, vigilar, proteger la Constitución. Y como están en una omisión legislativa continua, le corresponde a esta sala asumir funciones legislativas.
Democracia participativa en plena regla y con respectiva deliberación. Este jueves, el pueblo chavista tomará nuevamente la calle para defender la institucionalidad, la soberanía y la paz de su país.
No es solamente mañana, sino los días que sean necesarios, porque hay un pueblo venezolano aguerrido, defensor de esta constitución y de nuestro presidente Nicolás Maduro Moro y el ideario de nuestro comandante Hugo Rafael Chávez Frías. Aquí no estamos defendiendo un hombre, como lo dice la gente, como lo dice Almagro. No, nosotros no estamos defendiendo a Nicolás Maduro Moro solamente. Estamos defendiendo un proyecto de naciones enteras, las naciones latinoamericanas, que nos levantamos y le dijimos no al imperio yanqui. Ya basta, ya se cansó el pueblo latinoamericano de que su bota quiera pisarnos, estamos cansados de eso.
Paralelamente al pueblo chavista también se movilizarán este jueves los seguidores de la oposición, al que el gobierno de Nicolás Maduro volvió a reiterar su llamado para un gran diálogo político nacional capaz de consolidar la paz en el país. Desde Caracas, Venezuela, Mónica Vistali, Telesur.
La embestida contra el gobierno bolivariano también se desarrolla en la sede de la Organización de Estados Americanos en Washington, donde, igual que en Venezuela, los agresores hacen caso omiso de las reglas del juego político en la OEA. Francesca Emanuele amplía la información.
Y los organismos internacionales también se dan golpes contra los Estados miembros, aseveró el canciller boliviano, quien llegó de sorpresa a la OEA y enumeró las violaciones jurídico-procesales de la sesión sobre Venezuela del 3 de abril.
1. Ausencia de un número considerable de países en la sesión. Solamente participaron 21 países de 34. Al parecer, la opinión de los 13 países restantes no cuenta.
Para denunciar...
Lo secundó su par venezolana, que igualmente estuvo allí. Señaló que el secretario general tiene una fijación intervencionista con la República Bolivariana, mientras actúa de manera muy distinta frente a los profundos problemas de otros países de la región.
Cuando ocurrió hace apenas una semana en Paraguay, se incendió el Congreso de ese país, el Parlamento de ese país. Asesinaron a un diputado. ¿Qué dijo el secretario de esta organización? Llamo a la paz cívica en Paraguay. Es lo que corresponde, ¿oyó? Llamar a la paz.
Señor presidente.
Gritando, la representante de Paraguay interrumpió.
En este momento se está desarrollando un diálogo entre el señor presidente de la República, el presidente del Senado y todas las fuerzas políticas. Así es que, por favor.
La diplomática le respondió que así es como los problemas nacionales deben dirimirse dentro de los propios países. Las denuncias continuaron con la intervención del ministro de Asuntos Internacionales de Nicaragua.
El gobierno de Nicaragua condena, por lo tanto, una vez más, las maniobras injerencistas de un grupo de países que, violentando los reglamentos propios de esta organización, se han empeñado en discutir temas propios de un país hermano sin su consentimiento.
Pero aún demostrando con reglamento en mano que la sesión y la resolución del lunes pasado contra Venezuela fue fraudulenta, algunos miembros lo niegan.
Es una interpretación. Los países que hemos presentado la resolución la hemos presentado en un consejo que es válido, que ha sido convocado de acuerdo a la normativa, al reglamento del Consejo Permanente, y se ha presentado un proyecto de resolución en ese contexto que no se ha adoptado por votación, sino como pidió el embajador de México, sin votación.
En conferencia de prensa, la canciller venezolana habló de los próximos pasos a seguir.
Vamos en las próximas horas, muy próximas,
a convocar un Consejo Permanente Extraordinario para continuar evaluando el comportamiento del secretario general.
A esta sesión también acudió el secretario de Relaciones Exteriores mexicano, Luis Videgaray, para presentar el tema de la próxima Asamblea General de la organización que se celebrará en su país, titulada Fortaleciendo el Diálogo y la Concertación para la Prosperidad.
Esta Asamblea General se celebrará entre el 19 y el 21 de junio y la canciller venezolana ha dicho que estará allí como el año pasado en República Dominicana cuando se aprobó una resolución para evaluar el comportamiento del secretario general.
And at last you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM broadcasting live. We're back on the air. Thank you, all you techies who put up the antenna, did the wiring, sought out the location, and finally successfully got us back up on the air. We still don't have a studio, so we can't take call-ins on this upcoming show. That's going to be my show. I'm Robert Norris, and this show is called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Today is April 6th, 2017. On the show, I'm going to be replaying lots of interviews from the last couple of weeks and the nightly survival sleep-out protests that are going on at City Hall and will be continuing tonight even as the rains predictably hit if they actually show up, which they seem to already be dribbling their way forward. There are going to be some activists down there from the Freedom Sleepers who are going to be monitoring what's going on with video camera and audio recorder and their own eyes to see if the rangers and police are going to be driving homeless people out into the rain, out from the shelter of the closed and at night vacant City Hall hallways. That is not the indoors, but the outdoors where homeless people cluster to be out of the rain, the cold, and the wind now that the shelter program has closed down. I believe tomorrow is the last day for the shelter program. So in a way, this is a one day ahead of the shelter program. You can expect there may well be a larger number of folks, a much larger surge of people at City Hall tomorrow night and every night thereafter. So call-in number to the show, as you probably know, because we don't have a studio. We're looking for one. I'm willing to pay $500. If you help us find one for a year, we'll pay rent there. It's a 10 by 10 space. We're looking for a 10 by 10 area with electricity, internet, bathroom access, and we'll supply the coffee pot. Give me a call at 423-4833 if you have any thoughts about that, any tips, if you have any concerns about free radio generally. I'm not the main man at Free Radio, but I'm one of the folks who's involved with the collective, and I'll pass on anything you tell me. Or you can go directly to the freakradio.org website. That's freakradio.org. And now let's go into the show. Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, April 6th, 2017.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial, tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
So I'm at City Hall. It's about 12:30 on April 1st, 2017.
Evening. How are you doing tonight?
All right, man. And I'm looking on the sidewalk. We have, looks like, four or five people. Hey, Mac. Howdy. And one person on the bricks. And I'm walking through the forbidden zone. Don't see anybody on the deeper end of the City Hall area.
A few clarifications. This is a review of, I guess we're talking Saturday night, or it's either Saturday night very early or Saturday night very late. In other words, Saturday morning in the early a.m. or Saturday night very late. I'm not sure which. And again, we're talking about a visit to City Hall where people are sleeping under the eaves of the building every night, or have been for the last, almost the last month, I would estimate, because they have no legal place to go. And it's, of course, going to become particularly severe tomorrow when the homeless shelter program ends, the Association of Faith Communities Winter Shelter Program. And as mentioned before, I've received word today, Thursday, April 6th, that there's going to be Freedom Sleeper activists sleeping out with homeless people tonight under the eaves of City Hall, which is in the so-called Forbidden Zone. The Parks and Rec Department, in order to crush homeless protests a decade ago, nearly, actually 7 years ago, declared City Hall a so-called park area, and then, of course, proceeded to remove all the grass to make it as inhospitable during the day for poor and homeless people, and for the public generally, to be at, other than sort of as an ornamental garden to walk past. It is a forbidden zone after 10 o'clock at night by regulations promulgated by the Parks and Rec Director, Garo. And that, of course, was originally done by Dinette Shoemaker when she was the boss of Parks and Rec. These are ordinances and regulations that have seen no public comment period. They've not been passed through the Parks and Recreation Commission. They haven't gone to City Council, much less a vote of the community. And they're simply the latest determination of the sort of the dictator at the center. In this case is Mario Garo, who pander to the fears and preferences of City Council staff people, or perhaps critics who don't like the idea of their pristine City Hall being defiled by the visible presence of homeless bodies there, has implemented these laws without any kind of public safety justification, and of course closed the bathroom so they can smear people as feces and urine spreaders, when in fact it is the city itself, through closing the facilities, that is encouraging or actually making necessary this kind of behavior. In this case, the failure of the City Council to do anything about this, or indeed of the new City Council members to make this an issue publicly in a continuing and high-profile way. I'm talking about council members Christopher Crone and Sandy Brown, and maybe their appointees, if they have any. I think Sandy has a few. I'm not so sure about Chris. I think he has one or two on the commissions. the failure to make this a really public issue means that the freedom sleepers are making it an issue, and hopefully will continue to make it an issue until it reaches the point where the city has to do something to address the issue in a legal, humane, and decent way. The last few weeks I've been kind of wandering by city council, occasionally at night, often the next morning, to see what's been cooking down there and how the police and the first alarm security, which is the city-hired thugs that go out and try to intimidate people away, how they behaved in the last 24 hours, and also to hear from people what their lives are like, what's going on, and that's what you're going to hear here, and that's what you're hearing.
One guy on a bike. Two. How's it going? Ethan. Yeah, nobody's up here. Parked next to city council offices, which is the usual. So I'm just going to... take off. Talk to Jenny, who said that either as a ranger or a cop, or maybe first alarm, told her that, you know, that she uses, but she doesn't do so in public, so that's fine. A couple nights ago, no hassles tonight. Everything looks pretty neat and tidy. I'll see if she wants to say anything. Hey, Jenny, anything you want to say for free radio? Any more reports for free radio?
I just want to tell you thank you, Robert, for being supportive and being there for a lot of us that are still fighting for our rights and still sleeping out here.
Yeah, well, thank you for giving us reports so we know what's going on.
Yeah, most definitely. But I don't know, first alarm, they got some new ones on duty. They got cops patrolling here during the day. Uh-huh. Who's that over there? Oh, that's Rick over there. He might be able to tell you something. They've been fucking with all of them over there. Yeah.
Your first alarm is driving back and forth.
He's there in his cart. She talked to Rick.
Coming this way, it's possible.
First alarm guys are pretty cool. They know a lot of people know me. I've only been here 2 years, so I don't know. I really don't do nothing bad. I help everybody out here as much as I can. Everybody.
I see there are also folks over at the Civic, it looks like, and a few people at the library.
Okay. These cameras they put in City Hall, these new ones,
yeah.
They got a trigger effect on them. After a certain time, we're not supposed to be on the property, set off silent alarms.
Yeah, that's what you, and you know this is what they take.
That's what just happened because they were already out here. So I told the kid, this is the mind flag, but you guys are triggering off alarms, and that's why they're here now.
And I've been trying to get from the city information about these surveillance cameras, which are visible. At least there are these globes that some claim are the cameras that are positioned on the ceiling as you approach the city council chambers from different sides. The city police and city officials have refused to provide the specifics of where these are, how much they cost, how the video that's taken from them, how long it's kept, when they were put in, what documents justified this, who made the decisions to place them there and where. And I can understand where, if you're having an active investigation of some kind of massive crime syndicate or something, that you may want to keep those details private while that is actively proceeding. But the notion that you can set up long-term surveillance cameras all over the city and not let the public know where they are is at the core of a police state philosophy. And it's what we're getting, what I'm getting, from Public Records Act requests when I contact City Hall on this issue.
Yeah, see, there's a couple that's actually near the fountain, I guess. That's mm-hmm. where the first alarm guy is going.
There's the fountain, and they're setting off alarms. That's what they're doing. That's what those cameras do.
And you can't be here. You can't be here. You can't be here at night, is what they're saying. Yeah. And, of course, we're moving away.
So trigger off alarm. They're trippy cameras. They're a different color, like a copper credit color in there. You can see them.
I see
them all.
I see it. There's a third person.
They got like three.
And it is true, I've noticed in walking around there at night, that if you pass a certain point, lights go on, floodlights, which, of course, I've seen in private residence areas, too, different places in Santa Cruz. So that may not necessarily mean that cameras are there, but it's hard to get clear information. If anybody has information on the surveillance situation, do give me a call at 423-4833.
Leaving the area.
There's not just one eye.
Leaving the brick.
The cameras are out, like, all the way around. The trigger silent alarms are. Every time these kids go in there and trigger off, first alarm's like right here.
Whoop-de-doo.
Because they broke into the city hall and they've assaulted officers and they've just done things that they shouldn't have never done.
Really? When was the last time they broke into the city hall?
Quite a few months. I want to say maybe 4 or 5 months ago. And they assaulted officers.
Did you see anybody assaulting anyone recently?
No, I woke up when they yell and cuss at them or tell them to fuck alone, you know, they need to respect them and know that they're only doing their job. You know?
I don't like their job.
It wouldn't be any different if these kids got that job, you know, and had to do what they're doing, you know? Everything's got to work, but hey, those guys are only doing their job, so, you know, respect is respect. Either you're going to respect them or you're not going to get that back.
You've been here most of the night?
I've been here all day.
Any food delivered?
Yes, this gentleman, he's a chef named Tyler, came and he cleaned out his pantry and he made pasta and Caesar salad and a broccoli salad and something else, like a big ziti or something, feta. He wants to do it on Fridays and Sundays, he said. And it's way of giving back. And
now we're early Saturday morning.
I don't know. He's just a real nice guy. I just ate. I ate. I was sitting over here. I got soap spilled all over my stuff in the bag, and he served me a plate.
Time was this?
It was like a little bit after 9, so I don't know if he had to work. But it was really nice.
Sounds nice. You see a criminal there on the bricks.
There's kids out here without blankets. I tell them you got all day to come up on what you need. Don't come up with me at midnight when I'm going to bed. Go to the Salvation Army. You can ask for a food blanket every day.
Bricks is a terminology that indicates that you are not on the sidewalk, which, even though it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz on any sidewalk, anywhere, actually on any property that's publicly owned, after 11 o'clock at night, it's considered a crime. But this, for some reason, perhaps publicity reasons, perhaps to spare them a lawsuit's future claim that they had no place where people could sleep, they'll say, oh, see, we didn't enforce it in front of City Hall on the sidewalk one night a week, and therefore, see, we're not really that bad. You can't really say we had a complete ban. But in fact, for elsewhere in the city, it is illegal to sleep, and sleeping tickets continue to be given after 11, even on sidewalks. Though I haven't heard of sleeping tickets, at least not, maybe one, at the City Hall area on the sidewalk. But the brick area really refers to an area just adjacent to the sidewalk that you find as you cross from the library into the City Hall courtyard area. It's in sort of a small, rectangular area that's bounded by little walls you can sit on and then leads into the formal courtyard at which signs are posted. And it's closed after 10 o'clock at night, whether you're sleeping or sitting or holding a sign or having a reasonable conversation at a quiet volume with anybody else. That, again, is the law that was passed, the ordinance that was passed 7 years ago that I referred to earlier by the head of Parks and Rec to drive away peaceful protesters who weren't sleeping but were just sitting there petitioning, holding up signs, and so forth. It is true that recently, in the last couple of months, activists with cameras have gone around and given protesters or sleepers signs and the sleeping ban, which they put on their sleeping bags, and that has deterred some enforcement, mostly after 6 o'clock when it is legal, but people are still being harassed by the rangers for being in the courtyard area or on the brick area approaching the courtyard area or on the sidewalk itself where it's legal 24 hours a day to be, even to lie down in that particular piece of sidewalk. The Freedom Sleeper activists explained to the rangers that this is a political protest these people are exercising their constitutional rights, their behavior is not illegal, leave them alone. And then they start, when the Rangers ignore that, they do so, Freedom Sleeper advocates do so more loudly, pull out the video equipment, and then begin posting online the kinds of essentially harassing behavior that Rangers and other city employees have in the past engaged in. I have to say, this morning when I was down there around 9:30, when there was an event across the street called the, I'm not sure, the Community Conversation, perhaps. It's a weekly event every Thursday at 9 o'clock in the morning, run by a woman named Miley from the library, along with a bunch of other social worker folks, and I suppose some community members. There were about 20 or 25 people there this morning. They gave out coffee. They chatted. I went around and gave out garbage bags, compliments of an activist named Gloria, who purchased them and gave them to me to pass on. Considering that the rains are coming tonight, or that's the prediction, it was to protect homeless property and also homeless bodies in a kind of a primitive way from the rain. Notice Rangers engaged in any kind of harassment. In fact, they were taking care, perhaps because there were so many eyes upon them, though no video cameras that I saw, to leave people whose property was piled up on the brick area or next to the walls of the courtyard at City Hall or along the sidewalk alone, although there was a crew to picking up trash, but it had to be obviously trash. And at certain points, perhaps ostentatiously, I saw these crew members ask the homeless people sitting nearby, "Is this trash? Can I take this?" Which, of course, is what you should do. And one wonders if that would have been the care taken if there hadn't been a large crowd of middle-class people, some middle-class people anyway, across the street at the corner of the library at Center and Church Streets. Back to April 1st, about a week ago at night, about in the wee hours of Saturday morning.
Great packaging blankets.
Really?
But I tell them, you got to help yourself, because if you're out hustling and chasing your sack all day and wanting to get your high, you got all day to find a blanket.
Dig it.
You know what I mean? Less than a pack of cigarettes at the thrift store.
When's the last time that you heard somebody got a blanket at Salvation Army?
I don't know.
I don't either. I haven't heard
but
of that.
They do give them away. I do know that.
Dude is the name of a person?
No, you just go in there at the time they open and they pass out food, you know, during their pantry times. And if you ask them for a blanket, they'll give you one.
When are their pantry times?
I think it's from 9:30 or 10 o'clock to 11:30.
Good night.
So, yeah.
And we've been talking with
Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
And I've got to say, Jenny is often very articulate and soft-spoken, although several other folks there have come up to me and accused her of taking their property. Some have said that she simply she's claimed, according to what they've said, that it's unattended property. But there is some sort of, well, at least this morning, there was some bitterness and hostility developing around her. And I haven't yet, you know, sorted out who's telling the truth. I'm simply recording and passing on the different accounts for listeners to make up their own minds. And it's, of course, really difficult to do. But you can go down there and try to assist. I mean, we're dealing with people who are in extremis. They're in distress. And so would you be if you had to carry your life around your back, have it get taken from you by police who are supposed to protect you, by rangers who are supposed to be protecting the environment, by security guards who are supposed to be guarding property and not stealing yours, or by your fellow unhoused folks who are just desperate for anything, and some of whom have drug addictions they're trying to feed, some of whom are just cold and take what they find. And people have to stash their stuff. They have no place to store it, although there has been a rumor of a homeless valet service being bruited about by some Food Not Bombs folks who are considering doing a down on Pacific valet service to provide homeless people with a place to stash their stuff during the day. They get a ticket and they come back. later that day and pick it up so they can go around and do their business during the day. That was something that was used more widely by poorer people and travelers and unhoused people in the 60s and 70s in San Francisco, Berkeley, and here in Santa Cruz. It was called the switchboard.
Good night.
Good night.
Talking with
Tony.
And do you say someone from SoCal came and dropped off food?
Oh, yeah. It was a nice guy, you know. He came, brought us, you know, spaghetti, food and stuff. Bars and...
Someone you knew from before?
No, I haven't seen him around, but this is the first time, but he was nice enough to come and feed us.
How many people would you say got fed?
Nah, probably a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I'd say about 20-something. Not too many people were around because obviously the cops are hassling everybody. So,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
They shut down, Lorenzo Park now. Saturdays, they don't serve no more. They can have service prayers, but they don't serve no food to the homeless no more.
And what was the service that was shut down?
It was called, Saturday morning, Saturday morning feed over there at the courthouse. They used to give us beans and rice and give us some, we need blankets or pillows or be able to give us some cereal or a little milk or a banana, Saturday morning is the hardest morning it is. The weekend. When you
this morning.
Food, yeah. And you go there now, they'll have church service, but they don't even have coffee for us no more because the city made them stop.
And when was the last time the meal was served there?
Last week, and then now this week, nothing. No, they usually serve the...
You were there last week?
I didn't exactly make it because I was running a little late, but I heard it was a pretty good turnout, but that was it.
How do you know they're not coming back this week?
Because they said they weren't.
Gotcha.
They're going to be there, but it's going to be only service for praying.
Oh, I see. No food, just food.
They might be able to slide some cereal or something. Because he's such a good man. He feeds so many good people. And
is this Dennis Adams or is this somebody else?
Dennis Adams, I believe so. The preacher and his wife and his assistant. That's that big, the little guy. And Dennis Adams is the big white guy with the blonde hair. Is that him?
I haven't seen him for a long time, but I understand he's still been feeding people.
Well, if anything, he's probably feeding another town, and the town can use his help, still. But, we really need his help even more than that because they're just starting to get, kind of ridiculous out here. People are coming in from a lot more angles and a lot more farther away. I'd say about now, at least got to be about 6,000 homeless, if not more.
How long have you been out here, let's say in the last week? You've been here pretty much every night or been some nights away?
And every night myself, right there in front. And the only reason I've been staying because I've been trying to help the protests out to give us a place to stay or give us a place where we can lay down. I don't understand why we don't have a bathroom up here when City Hall's open because they said one man destroyed it for everybody. But, I don't believe it.
Bullshit. I'm sorry.
Well,
the bathroom can be easily dealt with, and they don't do that. But.
Well, it did use a lot of toilet paper because people were using it quite a bit.
Okay, I'll donate a roll of toilet paper if that's their problem.
And it was getting kind of messed up, and it was getting kind of clogged up with the city workers wanting to use their own restroom, letting on the public use the bathroom at the same time. So they were running into a lot of difficulties using that bathroom. So instead of them opening it up, they just shut it down with no warning. And it's been really bad.
It seems open enough when they have a city council meeting.
I'm pretty sure there's some bathroom inside for them to use, the workers.
Oh, yeah.
Inside,
I think you're right.
The ones outside are for the people that come and, when they, protest and stuff like that. But when they go inside, certain things from the city council. But we can't use them, not even the public bathrooms by the garages. They're already closing them. They used to be 24 hours.
And the city council bathrooms do have this rather deceptive sign, and also derogatory sign that sort of demonizes homeless folks. Closed due to vandalism. It's actually closed due to indifference and refusal to meet basic needs, which sometimes, you know, involves having to fix broken fixtures or clogged fixtures. Yes, it does. I haven't yet put in a Public Records Act request to determine how frequently the City Council bathrooms had to be repaired. They've been closed regularly every night anyway because the city does not want to enable the homeless at City Hall, I would suppose. Again, I'm speculating. It may be that there's some religious right that requires them to be closed or something. I mean, it's hard to imagine any other. Maybe there's an economic reason why they don't want to have to deal with the prospect of having to clean them more frequently or deal with repair problems more frequently. But the notion of this closed due to vandalism, that can happen if there's an instance of vandalism, then you close it until you can repair them. This is closed permanently because they were vandalized at some point in the past. That's really what they're saying, which is quite different in my view.
One of them did, for sure. At least that was for a period of time. There's, of course, those porta-potties that are not the best. Porta-potties still open on Cedar Street? Or?
Sure. One up there by the oak tree, big black oak.
One across from the church, Calvary Episcopal, and the other is about two blocks from here. They're both of them on Cedar Street.
What I don't understand, you know, they keep that bathroom pretty much with toilet paper, and they keep it pretty well cleaned up. But when you go to the one over there by Taco Bell, where they're desperately needed at, you really need two bathrooms down there. But let alone they just have one. They let people, there's just no toilet paper in there. There's nothing ever in there. I don't think they wash it. If they do wash it, they spray it from a block away, and then they call it clean. And it's really gross to a point where, you know, I can understand why people are defecating on the street and not even looking for a restroom.
And what Enrique is talking about is the so-called Posner porta-potty, or poo-poo machine, as I used to mockingly call it. Rather than open up a real bathroom at night with hand-washing facilities and soap and real privacy and space, they opened up this glorified porta-potty, which is still at the corner of Laurel and Front Streets. And there are two more porta-potties. One's, I think, at Cedar and Lincoln. The other is at further down Cedar, a couple of blocks. But as activist Pat Colby, well, she claims, I haven't checked them late at night. They're closed during the day. They're locked. And apparently, at points, they're opened up, but they are not disabled accessible. There's no disabled accessible bathrooms at night that are open to the general public. And it... Since many of the homeless population are disabled, either physically or mentally, that violates, of course, I think, the ADA, or at least that's been the claim of the activists John and Pat Colby. It's also the concern of HUF activists. There was a campaign called the Give a Shit campaign, which attempted to open up the City Hall bathrooms during the nighttime hours so that there could be a place where people could go to the bathroom. Although it's illegal to walk to the bathroom through that area after 10 o'clock at night because, again, of another anti-homeless law, the one that mentioned before, makes the city area around City Hall the forbidden area, a so-called park closed at night.
You're talking about the one at Front Street and Laurel, right?
Right there by Taco Bell.
About a block from Taco Bell.
Yeah, it's a really terrible, terrible bathroom. It smells like urine is all over the place, and then to top it off, it's always filled up, you know, with feces. They don't clean it as much, and they should start cleaning it even more.
I gotcha. We've been talking to
Enrique Oriorte,
and also with
Tony.
Thank you both.
Flight 801 left Italy. Got to New York town, then expected to leave New York, go back to Italy again. It was a normal evening, first TWA. The flight took off an hour late after slight delay. And it was wheels up, there was excitement in the air. For saw it was the first time they'd ever been up there. This time Flight 800 barely lifted off the ground before it was shot down over Long Island Sound. Scores of people saw it, and they wondered why. And light had left the earth and arced into the sky. They saw it hit the aircraft, saw the craft burst in flame. People asked who fired the rocket. Others asked the same. What was to be another flight over the Atlantic Sea was a flight that wouldn't be. 'Cause this time Flight 800 barely lifted off the ground before it was shot down over Long Island Sound. A Navy missile going where it wasn't supposed to go, or a terrorist attack, we may never know. The CIA announced we understood the popular confusion. What appeared to be a missile was an optical illusion. And for some reason, which we cannot explain, there are 230 people dead. Dead they will remain. 'Cause this time Flight 800 barely lifted off the ground before it was shot down.
As soon as they started drilling for oil, they started building pipelines on the seabed through the forests and across the border lines. As soon as they started laying the pipe, they said, "We'll do this safely. There will never be an accident. We can do this carefully." But the sand shifts, the ice melts, disasters are routine. Point out their record of destruction, and they'll say their hands are clean. Point out their woeful deeds, and they'll consult their banker and say it's safer to use a pipeline than an oil tanker. So now they want to see how far their madness it can go. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. The tar sands lie in the north, beneath Alberta's ground. As the price of oil rises, the oil men have found. Now there's profit to be made in a madman's dream by drilling deep beneath earth, blasting it with steam, bulldozing the land, melting what's inside, a record of extinction 1,000 miles wide. But laying waste to the northern plains is evidently not enough. The capitalists need markets where they can sell this toxic stuff. So across the farms and prairies, the oil now must flow. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. Governors oppose it, and every native band. Ranchers don't want it passing through their land. Union leaders have denounced it, as have the rank and file. The president delayed it for just a little while. They say you can't stop progress. I hope that isn't true, 'cause if we mine the tar sands, if we let the pipeline through, it will be a pipeline to oblivion, a pipeline to the end, a pipeline to a future with nothing round the bend. A pipeline to a future that I hope we'll never know. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico. A pipeline from the tar sands to the Gulf of Mexico.
And that was Two by David Rovics from his album If I Had a Hammer, Flight 800, and Pipeline. You're tuned to the actual Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.3 FM. I'm getting so used to saying to the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org that I... Well, I've got to upgrade my pitch. We are broadcasting live, or I should say, we're broadcasting. I am speaking live, but there is a delay because we don't have a studio, and in order to broadcast live, we really need a studio, or at least I do. I haven't got the technical expertise to broadcast directly, though someday you never can tell. I may get it. In the meantime, though, Free Radio needs your help to survive. We're looking for a studio space, as mentioned before, 10 by 10, in a yard, in a house, in a basement, on a roof, anywhere. And it doesn't even have to be in a downtown area. It just has to have access to electricity, internet, and a bathroom somewhere, and we will pay you monthly. And we'll also give a reward to any person who gives us information leading to a year's access to this kind of a site. Give me a call at 423-4833, and also call that number, 423-4833, if you have any comments on the show, any news that's breaking that you might want to put on the next show, or you might want to be interviewed for the next show. That happens, well, this next show will be coming up this Sunday. It's going to be on April 9th, and I'm really interested in, well, you can kind of hear the subjects I'm interested in by listening to this. Hoping to have some interviews coming up with activist Carol Denny of Berkeley on what's going on up there, as well as other cities which are essentially fighting a similar struggle, at least those of us who are trying to restore or establish rights for everyone, not just those who are wealthy and privileged.
In San Lorenzo Park, talking with
Esteban Sanchez.
Esteban, I came upon you. You were handcuffed, sitting on the grass. Three police around you. A fourth interrogating or chatting with this your companion here.
No, his friend.
Friend. And there was a fifth one over there who actually was crossing over to observe what was happening. And there was a sixth plainclothes officer over here. Are you a major criminal of some kind?
Oh, yeah. Seriously, criminal mastermind. No, of course not.
So, describe what happened, and you seem pretty much at ease. No one was beating you up, I mean, let's be honest, but you were handcuffed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a normal thing. I mean, I've been in jail, I've been shackled, so, like, handcuffs isn't nothing. I knew I didn't do anything wrong, so.
Are you on parole or probation?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Fair enough, you don't have to. Yeah, but did they say what they were, why you were being handcuffed?
I guess I matched the description of somebody.
How long did they hold you for?
2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
2 or 3 minutes?
That's very quick.
Yeah.
So I just sort of happened to come upon it at the end of it, I guess.
Yes, sir.
What's your experience with Santa Cruz Police? Positive, negative, mixed?
This is the first time I've actually ever had contact with Santa Cruz Police Department. It's either been sheriffs or Capitol PD.
And how about those guys?
Not the nicest.
I've never found my... tend to agree with you, but I haven't had much contact with them either, except at a distance. Any particular experiences that you think stand out?
There was one time that I got in trouble for fleeing the scene on my dirt bike, and I knew I shouldn't have been on it. I had no helmet, you know.
No helmet?
No helmet.
How could you?
Because I'm a criminal.
No, we're aware of that.
No, and I was riding my motorcycle down the street, and the cops see me, and I took off, and when they finally caught up to me, I was underneath the van, and they pulled me out by my pants leg, and the cop had his gun pointed at my face, saying, if I move, I'm going to shoot your face off.
Deputies or Capitola Police?
This is deputies.
How long ago?
Almost 2 years now.
Name of the cop with the gun?
I don't remember. I try not to remember those things.
How many deputies?
Approximately five.
And you were then what happened?
And then they took me to jail, they booked me, and they released me, cite and release.
And did you plead, or did you get convicted?
I still haven't even gone to court for that.
Oh. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, so I don't even know if they're going to continue pressing charges on it, so I doubt it. It's been 2 years.
I doubt it, too.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add?
Keep Santa Cruz weird.
getting very policey weird. This will be on radio probably tomorrow. Here's a card.
Yeah, that was an encounter with Enrique in San Lorenzo Park last weekend, actually. Here's another casual encounter.
How's it going?
Same old shit. How are you doing?
Oh, I don't know about that either.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, no. So how was the afternoon or?
Just beginning.
How's it? Okay, well, geez, you sound so enthusiastic.
I'm not, but I'm tired.
Right. Up late?
Yeah, actually, I guess so.
What have you been doing lately?
We came out of a meeting. We're doing up stuff. Civil rights for homeless people.
Oh, good. Well, that's always awesome.
Well, if you're interested, you can come.
Well, of course I'm interested. I mean, damn it, they're civil rights.
Well, they should be.
Not just for homeless people.
Yeah, but out here it seems to be like that a lot of things get manipulated and
just kind of like penal codes and stuff. They kind of go against, you know.
That's my feeling, too.
Grandiose, you know, the overall ideal of what we're shooting for as a nation.
Or shooting ass, so to speak.
Oh! Yeah, so, you know, I've had my fair share in run-ins with those that have negative...
Guys in blue with badges and guns?
No, actually, the guys in blue and me, we seem to get along fairly well. I don't mind fraternal support. It's more of the...
Now, should I record you for free radio? What do you think?
I don't care.
Okay. So we're talking with...
Bob, too.
And Bob, you say that you don't have a lot of problems with the boys in blue, but you've noticed some other problems with others, perhaps?
Yeah, there's been a few strange people around. I don't know if it's maybe just my own life, or if I just happen to be observant enough, or if these people are actually just part of some organization like Take Back Santa Cruz, in which they come and they claim that they are. Anyways, needless to say, they're very hostile. They follow you around. They suggest that you're doing something negative or wrong.
Let me ask you, hang on a sec.
Alvin.
So I'm talking with Bob here. It's outside the Anflower restaurant on Wednesday, the 29th of March. And, Bob, have you recently had any experiences with people that you use the phrase Take Back Santa Cruz? Did they actually say, I'm from Take Back Santa Cruz?
You know, there was a gentleman who actually did claim that the very first time that I've ever had a run-in with this organization or this type of hostility. It came from a man who actually looked a spitting image of Tom Petty, of all people. He came at me with his dog. I was walking my dog, and he tried to get my dog to bite his, in which my dog looked at me like he was confused, and I just told him, it's okay, boy, we'll be all right. And the man decided to claim, I'm with Take Back Santa Cruz. I'm from Savannah, Georgia, and I think you're on drugs, and I'm going to call the cops. And I just looked at him. I took a deep breath, and I said, do it. So he did.
And what did the police say, or did they come?
Oh, yeah, they came, and they looked at me, and they looked at him, and they said, well, wow, what happened? And I said, well, this gentleman came up to me trying to get my dog to bite his and was very hostile. I started having some PTSD, in which I stood there and I told him that he should call the cops since he's going to make such a frivolous remarks and hostile engagement towards me. And that's what he did, and that's why you're here. It has no grounds of emergency or of any sort of means to call 911, but he did. And the cop actually was what explained to him, hey, excuse me, sir. This gentleman that you see here, Bob, too? Okay, well, you're going to find a lot of those people here because that's the quintessential Californian man. Good luck to you. Don't call 911 for non-emergencies. But they still do. I'm sure they still do. Anywho.
Somebody give us a V or somebody a V. That's
something.
Good.
Passing by. Going,
well, Bob, we've been talking with...
Bob, too.
And Bob, thank you. Should be on free radio.
So I'm talking with...
I actually haven't heard many reports recently of vigilante encounters with Take Back Santa Cruz, harassment of people sleeping in their vehicles and so forth, though that could be because my focus has been very narrow in the downtown area around the City Hall area and Pacific Avenue. If anybody has any reports, positive or negative, about life on the streets or in vehicles as a rubber tramp, as some people call themselves, who are living in vehicles, give me a call at 423-4833. 423-4833. I'll get back to you.
So I'm out here on Pacific Avenue. It's around 9:20 on the last day in March, and I'm talking with...
Shannon.
And Shannon, your name of your pooch, who you're scratching the back of.
Gizmo.
And you and Gizmo are on the sidewalk with a little sign, sincerely down on my luck, nicely colored. How's it going? Are you getting any luck?
A little bit, but I'm just happy it's not raining.
Indeed. And how long have you been out here today?
I just started, so it's kind of late, but hopefully I do good.
And are you been in town for a while?
Yeah, like 3 years.
And has the luck recently taken a turn for the worse?
Yes, it has. It's actually been a lot worse this year, I noticed.
And what form did this bad luck take, if you wish to say it?
What do you mean?
In other words, how has luck gotten worse for you this year?
Just panhandling has been really hard for everybody. It's awful. And the cops have been really gnarly about really strict with the rules and stuff, so it sucks.
And have you experienced this in the last week or two?
Yeah, almost every single day. I get tickets all the time. It's like, it's messed up because it's like, I could be doing a lot worse things. I feel like a lot worse crime than this, so yeah.
Last time you got a ticket was?
Just actually 2 days ago.
And what were they ticketing you for?
Soliciting.
Soliciting? You mean like spare change?
Yes, panhandling. So.
And what did they say was wrong with what you were doing?
You can only do it, you can only do it in certain places. Well, basically they say it's illegal to do it in Santa Cruz.
That's what they said to you? You're inside the sacred discs here.
I was, but you can't do it after dark. You can't do it with a dog. There's so many rules. I mean, like, I was doing it by intersection, so I got a ticket.
Well, you're a real criminal here.
Yes, a hardcore criminal.
You decided to come to Jesus and get forgiveness for your crime.
Yes, I'm a hardcore criminal, obviously, finally, even though no one tells me I'm bothering them. But
is it a particular police officer who's gone after you, or you generally experience just harassment?
It's all of them, They all do it, so not a single one.
And have you ever spent much time at the Freedom Sleepers at City Hall?
No, I haven't.
Any sense of, do you like what they're doing? Do you care about, do you have any sense of that?
I think it's really cool. I'm just too scared because I heard the people get arrested or get tickets over there, so that's why I'm too scared to go over there.
And how many tickets would you estimate you've gotten in the last year?
Way too many. like quite a few.
And so. Have you been... warranted on any of those tickets? Have they tried to arrest you?
I'm afraid I might have a warrant because I haven't paid money, which is kind of funny because you're giving tickets to people who are panhandling who clearly don't have money, so it's like, how am I supposed to pay it? You know, you're taking people who don't even have money to pay it, so it's kind of like a vicious cycle, kind of, you know?
And the last ticket you got, do you remember how the community responded? I mean, was anybody watching when the police officer gave you a ticket?
Yeah, actually, quite a few times people stopped and said, like, oh, what's going on? And, like, the cop, like, threatened to, like, get them in trouble if they didn't keep going. This is, like, people don't even know would stop and say, what are you doing? Like, she's not doing anything wrong. But the cops would threaten them, say they're going to get in trouble if they don't move on. So, it's messed up.
They have a perfect right to watch that. And
yeah.
The cop is the person who should be getting in trouble.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I think so. I mean, both morally and also, yeah, I mean, in terms of the policies of even the very police department here that is giving these tickets.
Yeah, it's messed up. I mean, why do you give tickets to people who can't afford them? They know they can't afford it. They know they're going to get a warrant eventually, so they can put you in jail. It's messed up. It's a vicious cycle.
And we've been talking with?
Shannon and Gizmo.
And thank you, Gizmo. Thank you, Shannon. Yes. And any final comments?
That's it.
So I'm talking with Tyler. And Tyler, here you are on a bench with a backpack next to Bunny's shoes. House Pickens, you're looking for some support, looks like.
Yes, sir.
And you said, you were telling me the homeless have a particularly difficult situation. Do I understand what you're saying?
The homeless needs to understand that the reason that everyone looks down on them is because they don't clean up their mess correctly. Mm-hmm. And us as a whole, as like a family, out here in the streets, we need to look after each other and you know, help each other clean up our mess, because, you know, it's already a big mess in Santa Cruz as it is, and if we could just all pitch in a little bit one by one to help pick up the trash, I think that maybe we'd earn a little bit of respect from our locals.
And this, of course, I've talked about this relatively... I don't know if it's standard, but it's not an unknown... perspective on why homeless people are suffering problems with the police. It's, you know, the bad apples in the homeless barrel, that are the bad apples in the police barrel. It's never an understanding that the barrels themselves are to blame, not the apples that are inside them. the notion that if only you try hard enough to behave in an upper middle class, I'm clean and well-dressed and mannerly, even though I've had no sleep last night, have trouble getting clean clothes to be able to even try to apply for a job, have to deal with my property being stolen either by police or other people, and keep an eye out all the time, can't sit down in different places because there have been laws created, all these restrictions and tripwires that you have to slip past. Suddenly, it's all your fault, you see, because there has to be an explanation for why police are treating people badly, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. It seems unnecessarily cruel, gratuitous, sadistic, which it is, of course, in the most straightforward way. But it is, in fact, part of what police departments and other control agencies were set out to do, initially for catching slaves or dealing with uprisings from lower income people who were getting shafted by landlords or by their bosses or by those who had brought them over as indentured servants. They tried to rebel, and there had to be forces to put them down. That's what these people with badges and guns and uniforms are there for. Of course, in order to make this palatable to the general community, some of whom come from the lower class, that it has to be packaged in a framework of, oh, this is just a general keeping the peace, a consensus of enforcing commonly agreed to laws. Well, ask yourself how many laws you have ever been asked to consent to, or discuss, or create. The reality is a very small elite creates these laws, and they are created to with the preferences and prejudices and paranoia and privileges of a few. At least that's been my conclusion over the years as I watch this. But if you're being subjected to these laws, you look for some reasonable way to address them, some rational, systematic, if only I follow the following rules, A, B, C, and D, I can be safe. And the reason I'm not, it has to be those people who are making that mess over there. And it doesn't take into account the fact that at a snap of the fingers, the police officer can change the rules, even though she or he is supposed to be enforcing laws as written. And your chance of getting justice from judges, although you are trained in school to believe that that's the American system, is very much dependent on whether you have the money to hire a good attorney, the time and energy to get to court to hire private investigators or do your own investigation, subpoena witnesses, and then appeal judgments from local judges that are beholden to or working very closely with district attorneys and police. So it's really an illusion, a comforting illusion, I think, that some folks who are outside use to explain that it has to be that these other people are creating these crazy responses from the police because I'm not doing anything wrong. And, of course, the reality is that very few people are doing anything really wrong. And people start stealing from each other, of course. And that's wrong, obviously, in a certain sense. But it's also quite natural and understandable in another sense. People take what they need, and they take it from whatever is nearest at hand. And simply pulling out a Bible and intoning a pious morality doesn't change human need and human desire. And human nature, when it's crushed and cramped and starved and beaten, tends to react, tends to get brutalized. Anyway, let's hear some more from the Pacific Avenue streets. And I guess Tyler.
Now, have you been outside long, Tyler?
I've been out here for 6 years, sir.
And what have you noticed? Any changes?
Seems like it's only getting worse.
And how about the attitude of the good citizenry of Santa Cruz?
They could be a little bit more, respectful or noticeable that we're human too, and you know that we're not some weird beasts from another dimension, like they look at us.
Some evil criminals lurking on the outside.
Yeah, exactly.
Any time at the Freedom Sleepers at City Hall?
You mean the winter shelter?
No, well, this is the folks that every Tuesday night sleep out at City Hall fighting the law against sleeping.
That's crazy, man. That place is like a mess. People were slamming dope out in front of City Hall, and like, what are they doing, man? Like, we need to get our heads straight, like, honestly.
So when did you last see this happen?
This was like before they put the gates around City Hall.
Well, they don't really have any gates around City Hall.
Fenced-in area? Or my bad, the post office.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of the City Hall.
Yeah. And
do you use Food Not Bombs at all?
I eat Food Not Bombs.
What do you think of Food Not Bombs?
They're pretty good. I mean, I've been told by a few of my friends that they've eaten Food Not Bombs and then had food poisoning later following.
Have you ever had a problem yourself?
No.
And how many of your friends have said that they got food poisoning?
Six, about.
But yet you still feel the food is good enough for you to eat?
Yeah, it's free, it's blessed.
And what do you think about this, Hyman, this food poisoning claim? Do you think it's a likely concern, or do you think it's something that maybe has a delicate constitution because of the people you know, that maybe your friends are, you know, not as well as they might be, or is it bad food? What do you think?
I really don't know, but the government has a lot to do with it, and it's not so much Food Not Bombs' fault, but it's the whole government and the whole manufacturer of the food and what they put in it and what they put in our water and our daily everything.
You think the food itself is unhealthful?
Yeah, everything contains cancer of some sort.
Toxins in the environment?
Yes.
Now, when I was asking about City Hall, you know where the library is?
Yes.
It's right across from a library. Ever spend a night there?
No.
And you felt that's a good thing, a bad thing?
I feel like it's a good thing that I've been trying to stay away from there.
And so you think the folks that are there aren't doing a good thing?
I would say that their decisions aren't of the keenest, but...
Mixed feelings on it, perhaps?
Huh?
You maybe have mixed feelings about
it? Yeah, I do. I do. It's like us together as a whole, it's kind of making, you know, like, it's making the people that don't deserve to look bad, look bad. And it's putting the whole population of homeless under the category of criminal or drug addict or murderer or beast.
How have the police been treating you in the last week? And what's the last encounter you had that comes to mind?
A week ago when they threw my backpack and cracked my tablet for no reason.
And describe how that went down.
They picked up my backpack and they were searching through it, and when they were done with it, they threw it on the ground and cracked.
How many cops were involved?
There was three.
And when did it happen?
This was down in Capitola, and like I said, about a week ago.
Capitola cops or deputies?
Cops.
And what did they say was their reason for searching your backpack?
They said that I was sitting in an area that was suspicious.
And what was suspicious about the area you were sitting in, according to them?
It was behind a dumpster. I was trying to fucking rest, and I was tired, and they just harassed me.
And did you get permission to search your backpack?
They did not give me permission. They did not ask for my consent. They just basically said, we're searching you. And
they did, and then they broke your...
My laptop. It's right here, sir.
And you're opening up your backpack to show me and pulling it out. It's a small kind of laptop or iPod. And you're showing me the... Is it working still or not?
It's broken, sir, and they need to pay for it.
Have you put in a claim? You can put a claim in, not that it'll do you any good, with the city of Capitola, you know, if you want.
I would rather not, because, honestly, it would just... All it would do is probably bring more heat.
Could be. Or it could be that they'll leave you alone because they're afraid of the heat that you're bringing on them. But you're right, it's always a risk. Anything you want to add for folks out there who are hearing this?
Just keep Santa Cruz clean.
And we've been talking with?
Kyler.
Thanks, Tyler.
Sure, that's Tyler or Kyler, but, well, his account is more important than his name.
There's an oil boom. The prairies are on fire. Shale gas. All the fuel you might desire coming out so fast. No time to lay pipeline. Eurekaville. It's like the days of 49. Except this time they're using massive rigs that poison everything more thoroughly. The deeper that it digs, trains a mile long. Load it up in rail cars, send them west, send them east. Past cafes, schools, late night bars, there's an oil train coming to your town. There were dangers. They knew this from the start, but they were minimal. They said everyone must play their part and risk the destruction of their cities. Each time a train rolls by, hope it won't derail and detonate sky high. There's an accident each day somewhere, but we're not supposed to fear that it could happen here. Listen closely. Do you hear that whistle blow? Look out the window. Do you see the fire glow? There's an oil train coming to your town. It was after midnight on a Saturday night. A resident called in that a rail car was alight with that much gas. Sitting by the lake, it was no one's job to watch the car that maintained the brake on 73 massive tanks of fracking gas down the hill, gaining speed as they rolled past. Now at the music cafe that once was on Rue Frontenac, there are 50 customers and employees who won't be coming back. There's an oil train coming through your town. There's an oil train coming through your town. Civil war in Syria, 100,000 dead, millions of refugees without a roof over their heads, proxy armies flowing into a country open wide. You got Al-Qaeda and America fighting side by side. You got Saudi monarchs and French socialists on one team. You got Russia and Iran backing the regime. You got the Arab League having another meaningless debate, saying let's just see what happens if we wait. But now the West says gloves are off. It's all become too real. Now Hollande and Obama are dictating the deal. Now red lines have been crossed. Now it's time to act. Now it's time to have a few million tons of impact. Now it's time to do the thing the West does best. Time to step in the hornet's nest. We don't know who did it, but there's been a war crime. So we'll bomb an Arab country one more time. What we know is this, there was a chemical attack, kind of like the ones that happened in Iraq, like the white phosphorus we used on the people of Fallujah, or the chemicals we sold to Saddam for Halabja. But this time it's a different story, this poison gas in Ghouta. Our allies would never do this, those foreign fighters in Al-Qaeda. We don't know who did it, but there's been a war crime, so we'll bomb an Arab country one more time. We don't know who did it, but we know who is to blame. The Ba'athists are the party, Bashar Assad is the name. We don't know who did it, we can figure that out later. Meanwhile, we'll turn Damascus into a smart bomb crater. We'll fix them with cruise missiles like in Baghdad and Mosul, where they now have peace, prosperity, and democratic rule. We don't know who did it, but there's been a war crime, so we'll bomb an Arab country one more time. We don't know who did it, but there's been a war crime, so we'll bomb an Arab country one more time.
And that was two more from David Rovix's If I Had a Hammer album, Oil Train and Syria, 2013. So I sometimes branch off from local issues to broader national issues, and I guess I'm going to do a little bit of that right now. I'm looking at a April 3rd copy of the San Francisco Chronicle story, Senate Bill Tries to Rehabilitate Jail Conditions for Immigrants, by writer Ben Christopher. Bill seeks to reform immigrant jails. And of course, what I ought to be doing is talking about Santa Cruz jails. And indeed, that's what I often tell people concerned about solitary confinement and holding monthly and appropriate protests against solitary confinement statewide, is to focus as well, if not principally, upon what's going on in Santa Cruz jails, because that's the actual building that's right across the street from the courthouse, where people can actually gather to protest, make demands, and that's the building, that's the institution that we have the closest involvement with and the closest interest in. The past few years, there have been protests about conditions in the jails, about the deaths of some people like Christine DeLuca, who was strangled on her own vomit because Sheriff Hart and his staff, the privatized medical system there, did not take her to a hospital, but instead essentially let her die as she was going through withdrawal symptoms and so forth, withdrawal pains. Also note a few things about, more broadly, state conditions. At least this story does. I'm not sure how accurate it is. I haven't researched a lot of it, but part of it reads, trash-strewn cells, moldy showers, broken telephones, excessive use of solitary confinement, and slimy, foul-smelling lunch meat. These are the conditions that detainees face inside a major immigrant jail in California, according to a report last month by federal inspectors who visited the Theo Lacey facility run by the Orange County Sheriff's Department. For the past 7 years, Immigration and Customs Enforcement has been renting bed space there. The Sheriff's Department collects $30 million annually for leasing out the high-security real estate, and in exchange, ICE gets bunk space for roughly 480 of the more than 40,000 undocumented immigrants nationwide that the agency has been keeping behind bars on any given day. That's 40,000 immigrants behind bars on a daily basis. He disputes the critical inspection report from the Homeland Security Department's Office of Inspector General. Sheriff Sandra Hutchins said that although some legitimate issues were identified and were quickly addressed, many of the inspection's findings were inaccurate. Regardless, the news came at a bad time for defenders of the patchwork of county jails, city lockups, and privately owned facilities across California that make up the state's immigration detention system. For the state Senator Ricardo Lara, the report provided a well-timed I told you so. The L.A. County Democrat, whose immigration detention reform bill was vetoed last year by Governor Jerry Brown, back again this session with SB 29. It would set new rules for immigration detention facilities and would ban local governments from contracting with private prison companies to detain immigrants. On Tuesday, it cleared the Senate Judiciary Committee. While the state already regulates all detention facilities in California, Lara argues that the national standards articulated in every ICE detention contract, that's Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE, are not being followed. His bill would not require the Board of State and Community Corrections, the agency that regulates California's prisons and jails, to conduct additional inspections or to adopt new rules. Instead, the bill is intended to keep immigration facilities in line by allowing current and former detainees and the state attorney general to sue any facilities that violate these standards. But the bill also has detractors among law enforcement agencies and many Republicans who believe that the claims of mismanaged detention facilities are overblown They also argue the state shouldn't interfere with local law enforcement decisions and that Lara's bill could have harmful consequences for local budgets and even for the detainees themselves. Sacramento thinks it's so smart and has to mandate things to everybody, said GOP State Senator John M.W. Moorlach, who represents Orange County and used to chair its Board of Supervisors. I don't think that's good policy in this case, and I think being uncooperative with a federal agency is arrogance at its highest. The ultimate fate of Lara's bill may rest again with the governor. When he vetoed last year's measure, Jerry Brown wrote that although he was troubled by reports of conditions at privately run facilities, he wants to wait for a more permanent solution from the federal government. Although the U.S. Immigration Detention Program is the largest single incarceration system in the country, of the 10 long-term immigration jails in California, none is federally owned. 5 are county jails, 1 is a city facility, and the remaining 4 are owned and operated by for-profit companies. So again, note, people are being held in immigration jails not for crimes of a criminal sort, in the sense that they are crimes against property or crimes against people, or even violations of state and local laws. They're being held because their papers are not in order. They're being held because they have crossed the border illegally or overstayed their visas. So what we have here is simply the, your papers are not in order, 40,000 people. And that's the largest number, according to this story, the largest single incarceration system in the country. I guess, I mean, if we're talking about the number of people incarcerated, I think it's in the millions. And so 40,000 doesn't really rack up a lot toward millions, but many incarceration systems are either state-run or the federal system itself, I guess, does not have 40,000 criminals being incarcerated as criminals. If this is accurate, I haven't checked the other figures or with other sources. Again, if one were to jump back to Santa Cruz, which is really what those of us here, I think, need to be concerned with, the issue really is are the health facilities here still being privately run? Last I heard they were, but it could be I haven't caught up with that. What's the drug war situation for our own private jail? What's the situation with solitary confinement in our own jail system? Do we need people coming into the courtrooms doubly shackled with leg and arm irons the way we're getting them? Do we want the money appropriated for jails the way it's being appropriated? Again, the issues need to be examined in some detail with real options considered, something that, frankly, I'm not terribly knowledgeable about, except where a specific case comes up, and then I start paying a lot more attention. Continues, using data from public records requests and publicly available documents, interviews, and site visits, the immigration rights group Community Initiatives for Visiting Immigrants in Confinement, looks like CIVIC is the acronym, estimates that privately run jails make up 75% of all the bed space across California's long-term immigration detention system. Some of those incarcerated have criminal records, but immigration violations themselves, as I was saying before, are civil rather than criminal matters, and so detainees in immigration court are not entitled to court-appointed legal counsel. Awaiting their hearings or deportation, detainees may spend months in custody. With President Trump making aggressive immigration enforcement a cornerstone of his presidency, ICE will probably need all the beds it can get. Since his election, the stock prices of GEO Group and CoreCivic, the country's two largest private prison and immigration jail operators, have increased by 87% and 125%, respectively. If there's going to be a spike in detention in a relatively short period of time, recent history shows that the only way the government can actually detain these people is if private prisons provide the beds, said Anita Sinha, an assistant professor of immigration and civil rights at American University. And that's an article, Bill Seeks to Reform Immigration Jails, by Bill Christopher, who's a writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, And the bill, again, is one that would require, would essentially allow people to sue, and the state attorney general to sue, the facilities that violate the national standards. Of course, those national standards, I'm not sure how long they're going to be standing with the new Trump regime. The Obama regime was bad enough, and it looks like Trump is simply going to be following in the paw prints of Obama. And for those who have forgotten, there has been no new information about the status of the ICE agent inside the Santa Cruz Police Department holding down an office that had not been disclosed by Chief Kevin Vogel until it was exposed by Sandy Brown, John Leopold, and other members of the public who raised the issue on February 14th at a tumultuous city council meeting. And I'm sad to say that there's been no demands in any clear and public way from those who marched to the board of the Santa Cruz City Council to demand the police department cough up information about who's really telling the truth about not just this getting rid of this ICE guy who is in the Santa Cruz Police Department with apparently a permanent desk since 2009, but who was telling the truth about the February 13th raid. Chief Vogel has said he knew nothing about people being detained other than on criminal charges, though at least 10 or 11 additional people were being held on immigration charges by the ICE and Department of Homeland Security in that break-down-the-doors raids that caused so much public outrage. But not only did Vogel claim that he knew nothing about that, but he essentially had nothing to say to the Department of Homeland Security's public relations officer, Schwartz, who was quoted by the Sentinel as saying that the police department previously clearly agreed that they would cooperate with ICE and DHS, except that they would not allow their jails, or I should say their police station holding facilities, or their cars to be used as holding facilities. So, in other words, they would essentially collude with the kidnapping of these people or the seizure of these people, but they simply wouldn't also just to sit, keep their hands clean so they could wash their hands afterwards, say, well, you see, we didn't let them use our squad cars or our jail cells. Now, this is just the claim by Schwartz of the Department of Homeland Security, as if the Sentinel story is accurate, which is always, of course, questionable. But we didn't get any counter response from Vogel, and so I sent a Public Records Act request in directing the city to expose any correspondence between Homeland Security and ICE and Vogel or the police department. The response was, sorry, we can't, it's all confidential, which doesn't reassure me, and I would hope it doesn't reassure you.
Keep Santa Cruz clean.
And we've been talking. This should be talking with.
I'm the cat man.
The cat man. And also at this point, you have a nice, rather prominent "fuck Trump" sign on both your hat and on your display device, which is.
All right, thanks, man.
And you just got a $5 bill to add to this collection of ones you have in front of you.
5 minutes ago.
So are you
$3,000 at Macy's at Christmas in 1 week, 8 hours a day?
Just with a "fuck Trump" sign?
Just like this.
You're in Santa Cruz or up north?
No, Macy's in San Francisco at Union Square.
You don't have your beast with you. Where is your beast?
I put a Santa outfit on him at Christmas and nobody paid attention to him. So it pissed me off, so I made a "fuck Trump" sign, "Merry Christmas." And it made me $3,000 in 1 week.
Smart move.
I took it to Pier 39 after New Year's, and all the foreigners, they hate Trump too. And for and they want to take the picture. So every time they take the picture without paying first, I turn it. Finally, man, I go, $1, $1, I start talking Chinese. $1, $1. And they wanted that picture bad.
Dollars started rolling in.
I made about 1,000 in 3 days.
I'll have to stick with you, man.
I mean, you know, that's hard and hard. That's big time cash, man, with no taxes. Hell yeah. Just sitting around in my chair enjoying the Fisherman's Wharf. Hell yeah. But you can't be there at nighttime no more. It's changed there at nighttime.
How so?
They got violent people there and crazy people, and there's not too much police activity.
Sam, are you usually outdoors or indoors?
I'm outdoors.
And when you sleep at night in Santa Cruz, are you in the city limits? How do you deal with it?
Oh, no. In Santa Cruz, I'm up on Highway 1. Yeah, I'm up towards Wilder Ranch.
And you don't get hassled by the deputies?
No, I'm out on the land. Okay. You know, I keep the land. When people go by on the road that live on the road, or they're new in town, and they see me down there, they don't even come down there to check it out. It looks very inviting. No. You don't come down that land.
Well,
I've been there for 37 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, all I can say to you as I rush off to a movie is, fuck Trump.
Fuck Trump.
Thank you. We've been talking with...
The Catman.
Thank you, Catman.
I did out at the Dominican Hospital where there's security last Friday.
What happened there? Let me, for free radio.
I can't because I'm filing a lawsuit, so I can't talk about it.
Okay.
I have a very bad habit of treating homeless people, especially the night shift in the ER, like trash.
I've heard about that at different times. Did you see it happen to anyone else while you were there?
No, not while I was there, but I know of it happening several times.
And you experienced it yourself?
Yeah.
I see you have a song.
Once over the years. Thank you very, very much. There's some wonderful people.
Hey, thank you. And you're just got a couple of bucks from a passing.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you.
Little help appreciated is what your sign says, food and sense warmth.
I never have any trouble, and I really never see any the officers, the rangers, the security. I never see them out of line down here. Used to, a few years ago, they were a lot of when they were first doing all the security and the ranger thing, you know, pumping it out, that there were a couple that needed a little bit of training. See, I mean, like these guys right here, always got a smile on their face, always. Good evening, guys. How you doing today?
Hey, how about you?
And this is pretty good. This is the way always.
Those are your first alarm folks passing by.
But they're still. I never have. There's a couple. One of them in particular on Ocean Street. He got a real bad attitude.
Really?
He really got a little man complex or something.
You know his name?
No, I don't. But I'm sure everybody knows his description over there. He's got glasses, he's an older gentleman, kind of a thick mustache, gray hair, wears like baseball cap. He's about 5 foot, 8, 9 maybe.
Chunky or thin?
Thin, no, medium, you know, not chunky and not thin. He's just a little medium build, you know. But he really has a CIA, I'm all that attitude. I mean, I see him hiding behind walls, like, you know, around the corner, just staring at somebody. I know that person's going to stop and lean on the wall or sit down, and he's right on. I mean, he's really got an attitude. I had run-ins with him down here when they first started pumping the security.
Things have been pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, everything for the last year or so that I've been back out here again. So
you're here in front of the... I see you're in the box, the so-called, you know, free speech disc box, in front of this, I guess it's the Rittenhouse Mausoleum, as I call it.
Building, they're going to waste.
Big building, but empty pretty much.
Yeah, it's a shame.
And I've been talking with, if you want to say.
Huh? My name?
Yeah.
Puddin'Tane asked me again, I'll tell you the same.
Thank you, Puddin'Tane.
All right.
And Puddin'Tane added that he felt that the presence of the police or rangers or first alarm, not quite clear which, has cleaned up Pacific Avenue that worked a few years ago was... I had problems on both sides. He said it is cleaned up. So here's a perspective that I don't really share, but you heard it here.
And last Friday, I attended a David Rovick's Funa Bombs benefit concert and did a little recording with a teeny tiny audio recorder, the one I use to do all these interviews generally, a few exceptions. It didn't turn out as well as I thought, but it actually turned out better than I feared, and so I'm going to play some of that now. And I hope you enjoy it. I think it has some. It may have some songs that were not on his current albums. And he also confided to me afterward that he no longer puts out CDs. CDs are being sold, but nothing since 2015. It goes out instead as a video or audio on YouTube or podcasts. I guess is how it's being. Put forward. So if you want David Rovick's, go online and look for it that way.
People stood up because they couldn't stand. Soldiers insisted on free will, put down their guns, refused to kill. Newspapers of the underground, ubiquitous, they could be found across the country, across the sea, throughout the ranks of the military. Take it for thee, go out the fifth. Praise be to Ho Chi Minh, another frantic every night. A war that many refused to fight. Mobs were falling, some asked why. People stood up. Couldn't stand. The ruling classes with all their powers shook inside their ivory towers. They were brought to their knees back then. That's why we don't have the draft again. Even back then, some of them knew they had to be careful what they tried to do. Rulers who miscalculate, lose control of their ship of state. In order to govern, you need consent, and all of that just up and went. In 68 came the reply. People stood up, because they couldn't stand by. People stood up, because they couldn't stand by. So I think you know, when you look at like the United States today and you look at other countries, I mean, I can't help but notice that of all the, you know, problems that European countries have with foreign policy and stuff like that, like, you know, we spend half of our taxes on the military and none of them spend more than 2%. I think Great Britain and Greece are the two exceptions to spend more than 2% of their national budget on the military. Germany spends very little relative to their size. And I spent a lot of time in Germany, and I think and many other countries in Europe and elsewhere, and I think that it's the most self-reflective society in the world overall. Obviously, there's a lot of people who didn't get the message and are voting for AfD and stuff these days, alternative Facebook, but there's a lot of really smart people there. Around the early 90s, there's been this project of Stumbling Stones, this artist in Cologne started this thing. It's like a popular movement, basically, now that's pretty much all over the country and other countries as well. There's these little stones in the sidewalk in front of people's houses or workplaces that just say, look who lived there or worked there and when they were taken away. And,
we should do that here.
We should do that here. And I was having a little walking tour of Hamburg when we came upon the stones of my friend's grandparents. Katharina Jakob, long before she took that name, was organizing workers in Hamburg just the same. Organizing beneath the flag of deepest red. A new dawn, peace, and freedom, here he shines. Katharina Jakob, first was sent to jail when the trappings of democracy all began to fail. She was frequently arrested, in and out of custody, while her first husband was in hiding from the mask. Katharina Yakov was acquitted of a crime, but the Gestapo had the last word. They weren't finished with her this time. She was sent to Ravensbrück, a killing hunger at her side. She heard of the execution, how her second husband died. For Katharina Yakov, the end was close to hand. She was on a death march with a ragged, starving man, marching through a forest, being led by the SS. What would happen hours later seemed impossible to guess. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Katharina Yakov thought about her children and the friends and comrades taking care of them, not knowing yet if any of them survived, not knowing that soon she'd see her daughters both alive. Katharina Yakov watched the German soldiers flee, streaming from the east, that's what she was seeing. Allied bombers flew above them, she thought they all might die, and then soon there was the silence of all the SS men. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Katharina Yakov saw red flags flapping in the breeze above the Russian tanks, and she fell upon her knees. And so many different voices in so many different tongues sang the most beautiful song that could ever have been sung. In German, in Polish, and in Dutch, a myriad of melodies has never had been such. In Russian and in Yiddish, Italian and French, emerging from the forests beneath the trench. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. When the sun rose the next morning, it was the 1st of May, and they all sang the Internationale. They all sang the Internationale. Spoke ahead, they know it, auch so next them gefällt. The Internationale, and kept das Menschen weg.
And the Internationale, for those who don't know, is the communist song, which ends the final conflict. Let each stand in her place. International union shall be the human race, in numerous languages. Robics also talked about his new method of making money, or at least getting support to continue doing what he's doing. He and PM Press, which is the publishing company that puts out his stuff, and was selling his discs and his books and other books in the back. He talks a bit about that.
And so one of the things PM Press and me both have a lot in common, because one of those things is that we used to sell CDs. You know, people don't buy CDs anymore. I mean, we still sell CDs, but we still display them. People don't really buy them, but, you know, so until like a year ago, I found, actually, for me, set about 5 years ago, most Americans stopped buying CDs, but the Europeans were still buying CDs. So I, but then, like, just last fall, that changed, and like suddenly all the Europeans, they don't have CDs anymore. I mean, they don't have players anymore. Like it was, I think the Europeans buy electronics that last longer. I think that's their
story. Oh.
So it took them a few years. Their CD players dying, and then they go to the electronics store and they find that they don't even have CD players. They don't have cars, they don't have a man or cars or to do it. So basically, what we're dealing with is a post-merch reality, which has meant literally most of the new issues I know in the past few years have turned to other means than they would have been. Selling CDs will be an actually necessary part of the whole equation, actually, feels like maybe a third of their income, which was the third that paid the rent, you know. The strategy that I found, and that PFS also engages in, I think that it did very successfully, and other musicians and various other sort of small entities out there, is the subscription model, which is basically we give away all our stuff in physical or digital form, and then people give us money every year to keep on doing that. You know, so that's the basic model. It's like NPR, you get to tune into radio for free, but if you want to support them, you send the money. And if you don't, they go out of business. And if you do, then they don't go out of business. But you don't get any extra particular benefit, other than just listening to it.
And I think we'll leave the economics and the fundraising pitch there. I like David Rovick's songs. I've had sort of mixed reactions to them in the past, but recently I really enjoyed them, and I got a lot of his CDs at this benefit last week, and I'll be playing them on free radio. I guess you can find them now free online, and he asks you instead to send money so that he can keep doing them, which... Well, I guess free radio does the same thing, but free radio isn't traveling all over the country and going to benefits and so forth. Or if we are playing, we do play stuff from demonstrations and protests when we get it. And some of us do follow that, at least locally. But we're even more hand-to-mouth than David Rovick's, who is, of course, famous and certainly a far better singer and lyrics writer. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like his stuff, and I hate to compare everybody with everybody else, although I guess that comes up as a matter of course. Anyway, let's get back to Santa Cruz and listen some more from what's going on around here. So, jumping ahead now to the Red Church, where I often go to get Monday morning, actually it's Monday evening meal conversation, or actually it's quick bits of people in line while waiting for their meal. And this was on April 3rd, when there was a rather long line for the beginning of the month. Usually people have money at the beginning of the month and they, I don't know, go to a motel room or eat out, or at least don't feel they have to come to a church meal and stand in line for meals unless they want to, or, you know, have some other reason to come. But the line was pretty long this day, and I got a lot of interviews.
Yeah, reuniting with his owner.
Oh, Chato is your favorite pooch.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I don't even remember what Chato looks like. It's been so long.
I have pictures.
All right, so we're looking at a lost dog. Oh,
that
yeah.
That was from back in the day.
Cute, small black pooch. And what kind of a breed is he?
He's a Chihuahua and Skipper Key. That's him right there.
All right, well, I will find your number from my ancient records if and when I ever see Chato.
I'm going to have to give it to you again because it's changed. How are you doing?
All right.
It's 831-295-5905.
And we're talking to Steve here, who is one of the original Freedom Sleepers, who actually set up a rather detailed matrix that allowed people to record when they got a ticket, which officer gave it to them, where they got their ticket, for the folks who were doing the weekly sleepouts in front of City Hall.
Thank you, Steve. Any street report?
And it's a Chihuahua and Skipper T, if I have that right, a small black dog. And Shadow's dog was quite a cutie. Shadow was an original Freedom Sleeper and has been working his hooga off, presumably, downtown since then. Give me a call at 423-4833 if you see a Shadow or a dog that might look like Shadow or a report of Shadow, and I'll pass it on to Steve.
Any street report?
No problem.
Hey, Julie, any reports from the you-know-where?
Okay. No, not that I know, but I have a question.
Yes.
Did anybody figure out where we can get a copy of our assessments from the Downtown Most program?
I know you've been interested in that, and I've done nothing further on that, but if you keep on my tail...
Yeah, me neither. I haven't had a chance to do anything.
No more about it.
Yeah. I'm just curious to know where people can get a copy of their assessment.
And most, of course, is the mental health group.
Not for sure, but it's somehow associated with the Santa Cruz Police Department and the Santa Cruz Department of Mental Health MOST program with some kind of forensics mental health thing. I don't know.
If you learn more, let me know.
Alrighty, yeah. It's very vague.
Vague
thing.
Yeah, how's it going? Any street reports, sir?
And that was Julie Schall of the Santa Cruz Full-Timers, a website she has on Facebook. And I recommend you go there if you're an RV dweller or have friends who are, because she tries to keep up with the latest police and deputy and take back Santa Cruz shenanigans around harassing poor RV inhabitants.
Not much. I mean, I'm okay so far.
You look relaxed or tired or both?
I'm tired, yeah. I get enough sleep, I'm just tired.
I got you.
I think it's just my body.
Going. No hassles, no tickets?
No, nothing like that.
That's good. That's good. No property taken.
Mm-hmm.
Not very exciting. But good. Good. And we've been talking with.
Yeah.
Huh? Your name for our records.
Okay.
Thank you. So from the boys at City Hall are saying go away?
No, nothing new, but I'm curious. Did you see 60 Minutes?
I did not. I drove by City Hall and I saw somebody's property was still parked there.
Episode on a cop, I think a chick cop shooting an unarmed person. She was explaining herself.
That's good target practice.
That's true. I don't know, I wonder what she said.
Thank
I wonder
you.
If they gave the victim a side.
Take it. Big report of a missing bike. Why don't you tell us, sir, all the grim details?
Same old, same old. What do they say? It's not your bike, it was just your turn. Santa Cruz, man.
Yeah. When did this happen?
Last week, outside Loudon Nelson. As funny as I just woke up with it, I was sleeping on it, and I was trying to stay awake and not get another sleeping in public ticket.
Yeah.
And somewhere in my grogginess, someone managed to walk right off of it where I was half-ass awake.
Stay awake at all times. That's the answer.
Don't you know? Don't you know it?
And we've been talking with...
Name's Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron.
Application when I played for the Raiders. Khalil Mack. I was there for 15 seasons.
Oh, wow. Very good.
And I actually was watching, like, the years after my speech this afternoon about being a hit and run, mishaps and coming out of it. And because they own the Safeway and being like all right, you know, making it up there and moving for, you know.
It's so a little unclear to me, but we've been talking with
Khalil Mack.
Hey, Khalil, we'll talk again if...
for the LA Raiders.
All right, man. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Going on through the Thursday. Any reports? Any street reports?
Not much. I remember last Monday when I came here, there was some.
Bad boy bouncer.
Well, yeah. Someone that said, oh, you know, leave when you're done eating. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. I have no brain at all.
You have to be trained.
Exactly. I don't have a brain at all. As if I didn't know to do that on my own terms.
The announcement.
Get rid of him.
Joe Miller is back. We've been talking
with him. Long hauler.
Of course. Did you have something else you wanted to add?
Not much other than dinners are okay.
Fair enough. Thank you. Thank you, Long Hauler.
You're welcome.
Anything from you, sir?
No, not today. I don't know.
Fair enough.
I need to write it down.
It's all right.
You
got to hang up the gloves, man. CC5. So, I'm okay. Well, thank you. Any reports, guitar man?
I like your button, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. My I'm not sure which button. I got button shirts.
Hey, it's for your reports.
Any reports for your
food? Getting over laryngitis.
Robert, what do you think?
Hi.
It's the new you, Robert. I don't know what. Forever 21. Wait, now, what do you call that? That's a choker? Are you a horse now? I mean, what's going on?
A
whore?
Horse.
Guy's hard to hear. Horse. Heavens to heaven. I would never ever use that fucking language. Watch this step. Anything else for report?
Any reports from the
funeral? Oh, the library? Are they?
I have a new one. Of course I do. Yeah. Always, every week, don't I?
Tell me.
I was in CVS. Yeah. The long-haired manager with the corner-rimmed glasses and the piercing blue eyes that wears the fancy little gay shirts.
Yeah.
Came up to me and he said, "Would you like a bag for all our stuff you have put into your pockets?"
I see. Very nice of him.
I don't need a bag. I said, I usually don't transfer my stuff in and out of my pockets when I go in and out of a store.
So you wanted to save him a bag situation.
Yeah. So I have a bottle of Wild Vines Merlot in my hand. So I have that here. I'm looking at some chicken. He takes the chicken out of my hand, puts it on the shelf. And then I got the bottle of Merlot I take out. He tries to yank that out of my hand and wrench my arm out, right? And so I don't let go. It almost pulled me over. And then, so his eyes got real big. Oh, shit, this guy's kind of strong. And so then I wrench it back out of his hand. He calls 4 security guards.
We're here at the selection of food, lamb stew, Tex-Mex, turkey stew, and mac and cheese. What a selection.
So he calls 4 security guards.
Just for him.
For me. Yeah, lamb stew. So the 4 security guards surround me and start pulling things out of my pocket. A Gayaki tea I bought at New Leaf, they're pulling out of my pocket. Sure, sounds good. And I pulled a bag of peppermints I had bought at CVS 3 days earlier, half eaten, maybe a third in the bag. He goes, "Oh, that's our stuff." And they pull it and take my stuff I had already paid for out of my hand.
And what was your response to this?
I go, "Hey, you guys are thieves. You're taking stuff I already bought. That's a thief."
What do they say?
"No, yeah, get the fuck out of here. You're 86. Then they surrounded me around my bicycle. And they said, "Oh," they surrounded me, all 4 guys with shoulders out or elbows out, rocking me around my bike. They said, "Oh, what are you going to do, old man?" They started poking at me a little bit, right? Started poking at me. "What are you going to do, old man?"
Yeah. Ageism again.
Provoking me a fight, right? Provoking physical violence.
Right.
Now that was fun.
Italian?
Yeah. And so then I got my bike finally locked and got a little bit of ways.
Did you get any of your merchandise back?
No.
How many items were taken?
Just the peppermint. I was actually able to hang on to the tea.
Yeah.
Grabbed it bottle down about 2 inches from his teeth.
Hello.
Showing him what he's going to get if he touches me. Oh, sure.
Again, scurvy, I see. A couple of oranges.
And then, so then I got out of the parking lot. They said, you're 86. I said, well, hey, you pieces of shit. And hey, boys. Hey, boy. What's going on, boy? And I
left. You're getting ageist in response.
Oh, fuck yeah. They're provoking me.
Yes.
I treated them respectfully.
Right.
Respectfully how they treated me. That's respect.
I deserve respect. Yeah. And we've been talking with
Robert Brunette, suspected shoplifter at many stores.
I got you.
Thank you, Robert.
Long line today, although the line has now gone down, although it's about 6:20. And I don't see anybody being hustled out of the room like last week.
Steve Plage, any street reports?
I don't know what's going on.
Any upcoming events in the next few days? I should say after Thursday.
Oh, after Thursday. We're doing stuff all the time. Project Homeless Connect's coming up.
That'll be when?
Today.
Anything on the charts for April?
Yeah, we're going to start meeting with the Chiefs Advisory Committee, your favorite group.
I heard you were on that group. And you will be insisting that yours truly be appointed new chief of police?
A striking, in my view, oversight.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I'll get the next
one. And usually we get a longer report from Steve Plage. He was occupied, I think, buttering or cream cheesing and egg salading bagels, which is the final segment of the Red Church meal on Mondays. Just received a flash. You might have heard my voice in the background as I'm preparing this broadcast. It isn't going to be a broadcast after all, and it's my apologies to everybody listening. The ancient transmitter at the antenna site has died, so apparently we're going to have to replace it with another before we can go back on the air. But this show is streaming for those of you who have computers, and hopefully some of you do, because it's always reassuring to know you're not just talking to nobody out there or to yourself. And that's what's going to happen with this particular show. However, if you want to help with free radio, if you want to be a broadcaster, if you want to give us information about a possible studio space, please give a call, 423-4833, or get on the website at freakradio.org, which is where you presumably are, and clue us in. I'm also up for tips on homeless stuff. Plus, tonight, if you happen to be listening to this on April 6th, there will be Freedom Sleeper presence at the expected rain that is going to hit City Hall, along with, unfortunately, also expected police raids, although you can never tell what those police are going to do, what those rangers and First Alarm are going to do. And Freedom Sleepers, Abby and Keith, have put out a call for video equipment and witnesses. And so come on down there if you want, if you can. If you can't make it during the night, come down during the day, provide support, clothing, rain gear, even garbage bags. I gave out garbage bags today as a way of protecting homeless property and also, in a pinch, covering yourself up with a plastic sheeting, so to speak, of a very thin kind. And that kind of does it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We'll be back on Sunday. I'm pretty confident with a longer show. And I want to remind you that tomorrow from 1 to 3 you can meet with Sandy Brown, who is a city council member who at least has taken one step toward restoring even the semblance of democratic process at Santa Cruz City Council meetings by opening up the consent agenda process to anyone who wants to talk on an item instead of those that the council decides are worthy of allowing to talk on an item. She has a meeting from 1 to 3 at City Hall, and that's to say any time between 1 and 3 you can presumably find her in her offices. That's what she's told me. And you can also reach her by phone at the City Hall offices, 420-5020. But if you don't want to just reach an answering machine, or you might reach one anyway, but you can also call her on her cell phone at 246